This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batson with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations. The professor gives me permission for a book review, just momentarily. There's a new book, Judgment at Tokyo, World War II on Trial and the Making of Modern Asia. I recommend it. It's almost 900 pages, several hundred pages of notes and footnotes and diagrams. It is a very careful accounting of the war crimes trials that took place between 1946 and 1948, leading to the execution of several leaders of the Imperial Japanese Army, Imperial Japanese Navy, and the cabinets that made war. However, I learned from this book, Gary Bass is the author, that the Japanese do not accept the verdict of that court, nor the way that the Americans and the other allies conducted themselves in 46 to 48 with regard to the Japanese war. Japan then and now sees the war as defensive. The war was to prevent the empires of the Dutch Empire, the British Empire, the French Empire of taking over Asia. They were pushing back hard, and that led them to the war in China. Now, that is a Japanese point of view. It's not uniform, but it exists, and it exists today. Hence, they celebrate the dissenting opinion of the Indian judge. His name was Paul. They celebrate the dissenting decision of the Dutch judge. His name was Rowling. They celebrate the decision of the French judge, Bernard. You're surprised to hear that it was not a unanimous verdict from 11 judges and that they hanged them anyway. So is Japan. Prime Minister Abe, who was assassinated for reasons not to do with the war crimes, he's a relative of a man who was jailed as a class A war criminal. That means that he made aggressive war. Later released, and he rose to be a prime minister in the 1950s. Abe is descended from him, and Abe saw him as inspirational. When Abe visited the shrine in central Tokyo to the Japanese war dead of all wars, that was seen as a controversial move, but for Abe, it was a way of acknowledging that Japan lost a war that it needs to continue to fight against China. So therein, Professor, I come to you. China and Japan are, in their minds, enemies. Japan warned in the 1930s and the 1940s that China had the threat of being taken over by the communists and that would threaten all of Asia. They weren't wrong. Mao tried. They aren't wrong now. Xi Jinping claims he's going to try. What is the point of view of Tokyo right now?
Well, I think we see it rather clearly. On the same day that Mr. Biden and his entourage were having a very major meeting with Mr. Xi and his entourage, a meeting that went on for 4 hours and accomplished nothing. It is the type and specimen of a completely vacuous international meeting, and both sides did it for opportunistic reasons. Xi wants American money, and Biden, well, I think that Blinken doesn't understand anything about the balance of power in the Pacific, which is what really we're dealing with here. And he has this idea that we can somehow both be friends with China and be friends with Japan, even though Japan, which has been pacifist until a few years ago and still has a so-called pacifist constitution, that they feel now terribly, mortally threatened by Japan, by China, and China is doing nothing to reassure them. In fact, they're making object lessons all through the Pacific, showing the Japanese that an attempt to make peace will not be even considered. Just I should mention, but what I want to say is that on the same day that Mr. Biden spent 4 hours with Mr. Xi, two of the ablest leaders in Japan, in Asia, who are leaders of countries that are our close and key allies, namely Korea and Japan, Mr. Kishida and Mr. Yoon, they were there too. And actually, Biden did meet them, and there is a picture of him standing with them, but that's about all that they did was take a picture. However, Mr. Kishida met with Mr. Xi, and Kishida listed about a dozen really, really pressing issues. What's going to happen to the Senkaku Islands? Why are you boycotting our, why are you cutting, not importing our fish with this ridiculous claim that the water being discharged from Fukushima is somehow poisonous and radioactive? And it, of course, it affects the places where both the Chinese and the Japanese harvest seafood. Now, how is it that the Chinese harvest seafood, which is not dangerous, and the Japanese harvest seafood, which is dangerous, makes no sense at all? Kishida is also very angry about constant penetrations of Japanese territory. If you map where Chinese submarines have gone, the only place they haven't been is the beautiful lake in the garden of the palace in the center of Tokyo. I so far know Japanese submarine has appeared there, but they're constantly poking and poking and poking. They are really going after the Philippines in a way that is dangerous to the whole area. Even Vietnam, the communists in Vietnam were saved by China at the Battle of Dien Bien Phu, supplying heavy artillery, which made Dien Bien Phu untenable. And if the communist Vietnamese had not gotten aid from the communist Chinese, the French would have held on in Vietnam a while longer, and things might have been better. In any case, Kishida went through this whole thing. Japanese get very upset under the surface, but they don't show it. And the Chinese don't know how to read the Japanese. And so Kishida said all this stuff. And then what did Xi say? He said, well, first of all, Mr. Kishida, this is a serious business, and I would urge you to be more responsible. You've got to be more mature about this. You've got to be more serious. You can't sort of come over here and tell us all the terrible things we're doing. We're not interested in hearing that. And then he said, if you are as concerned about Taiwan as you seem to be, of course, that undermines the whole basis of the Japanese-Chinese political relationship, and you wouldn't want to lose the opportunity to be abused by Chinese diplomats, would you? I mean, isn't it essential that we have a close relationship? Now, what this shows, it's as bad as who was it? One of the Biden, I think, one of the latest statement from Washington has to do with the one China policy, which is something that was never part of what was agreed in the 1970s. Not there in any of the foundational documents. It sort of snuck in the Clinton administration, which was not the peak of American diplomacy. In any case, we, the United States, we have never recognized Chinese sovereignty over Taiwan. We have just come up with smoky words and smoke and fog, which everybody agreed would be useful at that time when both sides were eager to establish relations. Likewise, Mr. Tanaka established relations with PRC. If you look at the recognition language that the Japanese used, they say only that they understand China's very strong feelings about Taiwan. But the Japanese are not stupid enough to do what most countries, or about half of the countries in the world have done, which is to say that they agree that Taiwan is an inalienable part of China since time immemorial. So we
have a minute, saying, Professor. A minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, what she is saying is that what he's revealing is he doesn't even know what the recognition language was. He doesn't know it any more than Blinken does. So or Biden does. So we have a situation where all of these issues are converging. Japan is the pivot, and sadly, Washington does not have the memory to understand that you can't be friends with China and allied with Japan at the same time. Japan is our real ally. It's a democratic country. It's a free country. It's been a very good actor in the world. China has been a bad actor for much of history, recent history. The illusion that the Americans followed that guided our policy in the 20s and 30s was to lean toward China and assume that Japan was just going to have to suck it up. And this is mistaken, and I fear that things that George Kennan understood are not understood today by his pygmy successors.
Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, 7 Capital, 7 Points of View. We're headed to Washington, District of Columbia. I'm John Batchelor.